the evil of all evils. Like who has time to fall in love when you're running from evil itself? Like, come on, Harry. Wait until Voldemort's gone, at least.
But he's a moody, angsty teenager. But he has these hormones. He has emotions. He has feelings. That's just it. He can't fight.
Come on, wizard. Control yourself, man. Get your head in the game.
You can't use magic to, control stuff like that. Just like they can't use magic to control.
You'd have to use your actual own willpower to wait. Which I assume there's in there somewhere as well. But
Andrei Tarkovsky, Kurosawa, the third man.
Robert Michelle Ryan Johnson.
The Phi Effect.
From Milwaukee, this is episode 50 of the Phi Effect podcast. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to Matthew Boltz,
Jason Callen,
and Jacob Marie.
Today, our episode theme will be rescue, inspired by our review of The Secret Life of Pets. But first, we're going to be discussing Wiener Dog, directed by Todd Solondz.
A dog is not human. It's an animal. Nature doesn't care about them. It's sad but true. We're a dog's only friend.
Hey, Wiener Dog.
She looks like you.
Thanks.
I'm going to Ohio tomorrow. Want to come along?
What's in Ohio?
Crystal meth.
Okay. Nana!
This is Fantasy.
Hey.
Fantasy is an artist.
Nana used to do some painting.
I pose nude and spread my legs.
It's cool.
You need to exercise.
I walk my dog.
Exercise.
I can't.
You gotta have a what if.
What if you taught script writing at a film school and had no talent?
Wiener dog, wiener dog.
I think it's really great that you got a new dog. What's its name?
Cancer.
Why would you name it that?
It felt right.
I was debating asking you guys before.
Todd Salads.
I thought I would just take a...
Directed by Toss Salads.
An anthology story, a dachshund is passed around between different owners whose lives vary in dramatic conflict. I'm sorry, my co-hosts are making fun of me for mispronouncing every word out of my mouth.
From mispronouncing things in front of our audience and making a donkey out of yourself. So you should be thanking us and buying us more free things.
All right, this film stars Keaton Nigel Cook, Greta Gerwig, Danny DeVito, Kieran Culkin, Julie Delpy, and am I missing anybody?
You mean Kiernan?
Kiernan?
I think it's Kieran Culkin.
Kieran or Kiernan?
Not Kiernan, Kieran.
That's what I said.
You said Kieran or something.
Kieran.
Kieran.
Kieran across the street.
Tracy Letts. Zosia Mamet. Who else was in this?
Well, that's who that is. Mamet girl. I was like, who is that?
The filmography for Todd Solondz is as follows. Fear, Anxiety, and Depression from 1989. Welcome to the Dollhouse. Happiness. Storytelling. Palindromes. Life During Wartime. And Dark Horse. I have seen a whopping 2 of those movies. Happiness and Life During Wartime, which apparently are unofficially connected. They have some of the same recurring characters and some similar actors playing, reprising their roles.
Is that right?
Yeah, there's at least one character, the lead female character. In the
actual Laura Flynn Boyle?
I'm
I didn't realize
sure.
There was anyone who actually came. I thought it was just characters that were, it was the same characters but different actors.
That was my understanding of it too. In fact, similarly that Happiness and Life During Wartime are connected. I heard this is actually a quasi-sequel of Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Yes. We can talk about that shortly.
Okay, I must be mistaken. You are right, Jason. She apparently does not reprise her role. Darn.
I guess that looked enough alike to fool you, though, apparently.
But did not realize it was unofficially connected to Welcome to the Dollhouse.
This is.
What other films of Mr. Todd Solondz have you seen?
I have seen Welcome to the Dollhouse, Happiness, Palindromes, and Storytelling. I have been lazy and I've missed his last couple, which I feel really bad about, and I'm going to remedy very soon. But I have seen those 4, and I like them all.
I've seen a lot of the trailers for his films. I have not seen any actual
Salons film before Wiener Dog. So this was my first feature-length Salons.
The five I've seen, I still feel like maybe Welcome to the Dollhouse is the one I like the most, but I mean, they all have a similar aesthetic and qualities. It's kind of hard to really say which one's the best, but Dollhouse is definitely the one I've seen the most and the one that, you know, kind of, I just always kind of go back to. Happiness is the one that disturbed me the most, so I don't know, like, where to fit that in exactly. But they all appreciate, too, with each viewing. He's someone who's, like, I don't know, there's a lot of richness to his mm-hmm. characters and his narratives that, you know, benefits reviewings.
I did enjoy the extremes that are presented in Happiness and how they are presented. He has a good variety of directing techniques throughout just a single film of his. But I thought Life During Wartime, the unofficial sequel to Happiness, I enjoyed that a bit more because it was more subtle. And I think it evoked more creative aspects as far as storytelling. Because I know that there are some ghostly figures in this film, as well as recurring dream sequences that exude a more ethereal tone to it. So I think I appreciated Life During Wartime a bit more than Happiness, which seemed more to revolve around shock and awe. That said, here we are reviewing Wiener Dog, and I'm curious to know if we have any numbers, as this was released only 3 days ago.
Well, it was actually released earlier this year. I think it had a limited release in June, and it's been going out since then. According to Box Office Mojo, it has made a total of just shy of 384,000 in its total release. It was first released back on June 24th in like New York, LA, and it's been expanding since then. And I think it's only had a domestic release. It hasn't been released internationally yet. I'm interested in the production companies behind this. I mean, this is another Amazon Studios film, but not just that. It's another Annapurna Pictures film. So that's Megan Ellison. She's kind of the Silicon Valley startup lady who's been funding a lot of films. She's like, her business call has been, you know, to fund films that the regular studios wouldn't fund over the past few years, films that are aimed at a more adult audience. So what did she... She started coming to prominence in like 2012 with like Lawless, The Master, Killing Them Softly. She produced Her, American Hustle, Foxcatcher, stuff like that.
Yeah, we've talked about her before.
Yeah. And then it was also co-produced by Killer Films, which is run by Christine Vachon. I think that's how you pronounce her name. She's produced like a lot of works of like Todd Haynes and people like that. And I think, has she produced any of Todd Solondz's work? Oh yeah, she did produce Happiness. And then some other some other films that Killer Films has produced are like Boys Don't Cry, 1 Hour Photo, A Dirty Shame.
That's a John Waters movie.
Yeah. Some most recent films were, well, Carol, obviously. Still Alice, that Julianne Moore vehicle. Mm-hmm. The upcoming film Goat, which is about...
College fraternities and initiations.
Oh, is that what that's about?
Hazing, initiations. Mm-hmm. So I forgot who starred in it, but it looks like it might have potential.
It's got Franco. It's got one of the Jonas Brothers, of all people.
That's who
and
it was.
Some other kind of like teen star, Ben Schnetzer.
You know, credit to this Jonas boy for not just selling out and going into a blockbuster film. This looks more like it has, like it would require some dramatic chops to pull off. But anyways, is there anything else about this movie?
Ed Lockman was the cinematographer.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up later, but...
Todd Haynes is cinematographer. He was nominated for Carol.
Should have won for Carol. Best cinematography of the last year.
Apparently Brie Larson was in this film, but she was cut out during post-production.
Really?
She had a character who was cut out.
Interesting. I mean, I suppose you could probably, you know, there could be dozens of characters that mm-hmm. we don't know about.
Yeah.
The way this movie is.
I wonder what the story was behind that cutting, if it was just director decision. Because this film was short.
It was.
Only 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half.
And typically, when a movie has an intermission, which this film does, I typically tell myself it's probably because they need to extend it a couple extra minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's... Fair enough guess. Mm. I think they just did it because that was a really funny intermission.
I can't blame him for that.
Apparently he's been trying, Solondz has been trying to make this film for years. He wrote the script several years ago, but was unable to find funding. And then finally he must have stumbled across Megan Ellison. She's like, yeah, here's a few million.
Yeah, you're
I don't have actual numbers on what its budget was, so I'm not sure exactly how much it cost.
That's interesting because I noticed at least one shot in here which almost seemed to reference a film from prior years. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just delusional, but I thought that was a direct reference to another movie that came out last year.
I'd have to know what shot you were talking
or
about.
Or 2 years ago, I can't remember.
This movie did contain two shots where I was like, please make this shot end, please make this shot end, please make this shot end. And it took a long time, but yeah, they eventually ended.
Jason, what is your initial reaction to Wiener Dog?
I like Wiener Dog. You know, it was a Solondz movie. It was dark Solondz movie. Now I'm doing it. Thanks, Matt. Jesus.
Solondz. That sounds like Haagen-Dazs.
I know, right? Haagen-Dazs. It was a Solondz movie. It was weird and dark and funny at the same time, and more interested in character than story, I thought. I was a little disappointed in the bringing back the Dawn Wiener character and casting Greta Gerwig to play her, because it kind of spits in the face of what made that character so compelling and so great to begin with. But I got over it. That was my least favorite sequence of the film, though, as far as the whatever we get, 3-4 episodes?
I think 5?
What, are you counting the intermission in the episode?
I think it's just 4.
Okay.
Unless you count very ending as its own episode, where it's right. 6 months later. But
yeah, for some reason, I thought it was 5, but
no, because you get the intro with the guy dropping him off, then you get the recovering cancer patient kid,
mm-hmm.
who's the first big story, and then
then we
get Dawn. She steals it. She gives it to what's his name's brother. We don't get theirs.
Yeah, that's not really a story.
No, that's part of Dawn's story. That you know, mm-hmm. so we don't get what their actual experience was.
Mm-hmm.
We get the intermission instead, and then we get
DeVito's character.
So 4 like legitimate ones.
No, that's only 3 so far.
No, that's 4. Well, I mean, and the last one with Ellen.
The
Burstyn,
last, yeah, okay, yeah.
With Ellen Burstyn being the last one.
All right.
So I was disappointed with that recasting. I mean, I understand not wanting to make it like a legitimate sequel, and because it's just like one episode in this thing, that it's I can understand artistically, but it felt like kind of a betrayal to that character and like what she was, which is kind of like, you know, quote unquote, like unattractive girl, you know, and so much of Welcome to the Dollhouse is kind of just about like her struggle. And I mean, it is it's her movie. So to see someone else doing it, and maybe it was just because it was Gerwig, and I'm, you know, guys, I'm not a huge fan of hers. So maybe it was just that, but that was the one thing that kind of disappointed me. Other than that, like, I thought it was a good movie. Maybe not my favorite of his, but he's great, and I'll keep watching his movies. So that's my first impression.
Jacob?
Yeah, this is my first Solondz film. I had not seen anything beforehand, but I had like a glimmer of an idea of kind of what to expect. Like, I didn't go in expecting a happy movie or anything of the sort. I'm going to do like some shameless self-promotion briefly by just referencing a tweet that I had.
Oh man, the age of Twitter.
Yeah. And I made this pretty much right after I walked out of the movie yesterday. Maybe I gave it like 20 minutes and then I posted it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "You guys, I feel like you guys are going to hate me for this. Wiener Dog is the most pointless, rage-inducing, uninfocused film of the year, and this coming from the same year that gave us Warcraft 2. I did not like this film at all. For most of the film, I was kind of tolerating it. I was saying, okay, there are some points of merit in here, and I can appreciate it, but it's just not working for me personally. But then the ending of the film came, and I was like, I give up on this film. I have no sympathy for this film at all. I didn't even like the way it was executed, because everyone is just played in this very depressed manner. And I think you guys should know me enough by now that I don't expect movies to be happy or anything like that. And I don't want every movie to be happy, but it was just played so lifeless, and it gave me like no real reason to like keep maintaining interest in these characters. And it's like, I feel like the point of the film is like, I mean, I guess it's supposedly how we deal with death and stuff like that, but like 10 minutes into the film, I get the message like life sucks, people are terrible, bad things happen. And it doesn't really give me any other revelations or anything else to build off of besides that. And I guess it kind of takes the position of just kind of poking fun at everyone and just kind of painting everyone in this terrible manner, which is like cool, but then it also kind of gets into this area which is moral fence sitting for me, which I've really come to dislike in any sort of art. It's like, I don't care if you like take a position on something and make that a point and I don't agree with it, but if you're just kind of making fun of everyone and just kind of saying and then positioning yourself as being great because you're poking fun at everyone, it's like you're not taking a position on anything at all. You have nothing to stand for or anything. And yeah, we'll talk about more in spoilers with the ending, but I thought it was, especially with other films that came out this year with like violence against animals and stuff like that and how that was shocking, but the mistreatment that this dog goes through in this film I feel is like almost worse than some of the other films that we've seen this year. And the ending was just pointless to me, and I wanted to just scream at the screen. I was just so upset with this film. It's like it was an all right film at first for me, and then the ending just kind of made everything that I hated about the film just come more full circle. So yeah, this is, I can't say that this is like a poorly made film, because like I said, there are parts of it that I do enjoy, but as of right now, this is my least favorite film of the year. I did not like this.
Wow. Bear in mind all the other movies we've seen so far.
Oh,
so.
I've got them in mind. I've got many in mind.
Did the dog actually experience any maltreatment in this movie?
Not a single bit, except for getting fed something he shouldn't have had.
Because he was in the hands of owners who didn't know how to take care of him or her.
Well, no, because their kid disobeyed them and did something he wasn't supposed to do. The dog is treated perfectly fine throughout the entirety of this movie.
It's not really like loved or anything at all. Like just barely.
Oh, that kid loved that dog.
How do you?
That kid loved the dog and then mistreated it because the kid was dumb.
He didn't intentionally poison the dog. He didn't. You know, there was no intent there. You know, it's. How can you say it's not love? I don't know what we want to say in prior to spoilers, but I mean, she quits her life to save this dog. It's not maltreated. It's the only thing that wherever it goes, it's the only joy in any of those moments. It's the one constant like happy kind of thing that is in this whole movie. It's I can't think of anything that happens to the dog except for, you know, not having it tied up when you fall asleep on your bench. Like, I don't know. Like what
else? Maybe that's why it just angered me so much at what happened at the end. And maybe that's what's supposed to happen. Sure, but I'm not buying into that ploy then.
What do you mean that's what's supposed to happen?
Because it's like if the dog is like the one bit of joy in the film that's supposed to kind of make you feel any sort of happiness towards any of these characters or any sort of like, or for them to feel any sort of like happiness to keep on living and stuff like that, since death seems to be such a prominent theme, and then the one spot of joy is kind of wiped out at the end of the film. It's like maybe that's the point to go along with the film's overarching theme of like life sucks. Fine, I don't have to like it at all, because I don't.
No, you don't have to like it.
Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, but Todd Solondz does not normally make anything that's optimistic, does he?
Optimistic is, I mean, I don't know how to answer that really, because no, it's not optimistic necessarily.
Something
but it's
that
also
has you leaving the
no,
television
he doesn't make
the
feel good movies. He doesn't. Okay. He's not trying to, you know, make you forget your problems. He's always confrontational in regards to, you know, realities of the drudgery of life of day to day existence. Mm-hmm. So maybe I was just prepped for that, but I don't find him pessimistic either. I don't see him as someone who is making fun of all of his characters. I think he genuinely empathizes with all these characters and, you know, characters that in his previous films. But he does, you know, he does stare certain realities in the face. And whether that's like too blunt at times, maybe. But I don't know. I, for one, appreciate that. And I'm sorry. I laughed at the end of the movie. Hopefully I'm not the only one, but I had to laugh a little bit. I'm sorry. It was
to each their own.
Kind of funny. I mean, it was, I don't want to say it now. We can talk about it more in spoilers, but I did laugh. I'm sorry. And I laughed at other points in this movie too. Mm-hmm. I think his satire is extremely like dark, and it
but what's he satirizing? Just like
I think
because it just seems so aimless to me. It just seems so unfocused.
No, I think like, part of it is like just it is a satire of like conventional filmmaking of conventional, you know, feel good films, and even when you have like the cute, adorable like centerpiece to your movie, which is really just like this kind of meandering beast that doesn't really, you know, outside of the first one, you don't really. Like there doesn't he never as much joy as he's used for or attempted to be used for.
I think the like, dog is a she.
She. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. As she is used for. All these stories can be told without the dog in them. Like there's, you know, so it's just she's just kind of this accessory that we're expected to believe you know is bringing something positive. You know, with Dawn's character, it's obvious, like she, you know, you can tell, but the others, it's not even necessarily, you know, I mean, that's what I was saying earlier, but it's not like, it's more subtle than that. Like it is the thing that's like keeping these people from being like completely miserable all the times, but they're not even like necessarily aware of it. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's, I can't believe you don't like this movie. I'm kind of flabbergasted actually. So I'm just going to pause for a second and collect my thoughts.
Yeah. I had actually been thinking this entire time about the purpose behind composing this kind of anthology story with the Wiener Dog as a centerpiece. And we brought up some good points, actually. Like, what is the purpose of the Wiener Dog? Obviously, I do agree with Jason. It is probably the high point in a lot of these stories, because look at how each of these stories end. And I'm going to shy away from spoilers here, but some of them focus on cancer or, you know, imminent death. Some of them end with two people just basically saying, you know, what's going to happen now? Well, we're just going to drive and see what happens. And I actually began to realize, you know, if you look at it chronologically, how the Wiener Dog affects each of these stories and how the stories kind of center around this dog. The first one, I think it is treated with the most attention and the best attention. And as you progress, that attention becomes very unpresent and possibly even disdainful to the point where the dog is named Cancer. So maybe, I mean, there seems to be something there where the delight of having this dog around really diminishes leading up into the ending. But again, we can reserve that until spoilers. My initial impression is, I mean, probably on the same page, closer to you, Jason. I didn't hate this movie. It did kind of bewilder me at several points. There is a lot of really solid drama in this movie to the point where, again, with Jason, I feel like each of these stories could be its own entity without the Wiener Dog, without the weak connection to other stories. I would have loved to see how a lot of these tales would have played out had they been a feature-length film. But I didn't really find anything to especially hold up into the spotlight. So I appreciated and admired a lot of these stories and the acting. The acting I thought was really stellar. But at the end of the day, it's an anthology story, and anthology stories can only do so much for me.
Okay.
I mean, especially if there is no evident connecting theme.
No, I get that. I mean, there is a connecting theme. There's just not connecting, like, narrative. I mean, there's plenty of connecting themes.
What are some of the connecting themes?
Death would be one of the connecting themes, and, like, misery. All the things that Jacob was, you know, poo-pooing earlier.
Jeez.
I'm sorry, man. What do you want me to say? Oh, I totally agree with you when you're completely wrong? No, I can't do that. I'm sorry. That would be dishonest.
It's kind of weird how it's like the first two anthologies were, like, it seemed like there was a narrative progression in terms of, like, the dog was dropped off at the clinic because it was going to get killed.
Right,
and
sure.
Then,
but even if you continue.
But then, like, by the end, it's like, how'd the dog get from one person to the other?
Because it doesn't matter, because those little connective.
It doesn't matter.
Of course it doesn't matter. Why would it matter? Like, those little connective moments are, that's all they are. Like, you can fill in those blanks any way you want. Like, why they didn't do a segment with the couple with Down syndrome? I don't know. I think it would have been a really cool segment. Probably the most joyful of all of them.
Can't have that joy.
Or they just, you know, left a door open and it lasted 5 minutes and it just ran out.
I didn't get why they, like, were adamant about showing, like, how the dog went from one story to the other, and then they're like, by the end of the film, it's just like, nah, we don't need to know how these stories are connected, because that's what was kind of interesting, how the dog moved from one life to another.
Sure.
And then it was just like, poof, the dog just appears. It's like,
it doesn't just appear. You just have to fill in the blanks. I mean, they're just, he's just, you know, tightening the movie up. Like, you don't need those connective tissues. Like, you can do all that without having it visualized for you. There's but once they establish that this is what we're doing here, we're just showing the life of this dog, and it's, you know, it's not a normal life. It's where he gets an owner, and he's like this wandering dog, and this is his life. And he has the, once they establish that, you don't need every little connective tissue to work your way through the film. I mean, you've seen enough films, you know what an ellipsis is. That's he's with someone else now, and that's it. Like, who cares how he got there? Like, what could that possibly matter?
I don't know. It's just the way it was presented. It just seemed a little too disjointed.
It's
never really committed to one way of showing it or another.
I think there's a progression. You know, it's there, and then you lose that connective tissue, and you get the intermission, and then it's from then on, it's like, we're gonna hop from this to this as he wanders, and the background switches. It's winter now. But I enjoyed the acting in this too. You were saying, Matt. I thought it was curious how everything was. It felt very staged, like particularly like in the first sequence, like where the guy's like standing. You know, they're having an argument, and he's like, it's like he was standing in his argument spot, and she's kind of doing her thing, and he's standing like giving his kind of like the human motivations and things were really just kind of like necessities for a script, and not, you know, I don't know how to say it exactly, but it was just this kind of the stagey feeling to it that was kind of abnormal for films in general, and even his films, they generally have a more kind of normal kind of fluid acting, but this I felt was kind of odd. It's not like a play odd. It's just different from what I'm used to. And I thought it was really interesting. I kind of want to see this again, honestly. I think
it moves pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's a short film. It's I don't know, there's just so much going on because you're with so many different people. And yes, their through line is kind of like death and the relation to death. And, it would have been nice, I guess, to get a little more of actual interaction between some of the owners and the dogs and the dog.
Yeah, the synopses online made reference to the dog affecting the lives of these people. And I don't know if it affects these people as much as it should have.
No, I agree, but I think that might be part of the satire also, is like kind of this expectation we have when we bring these creatures into our lives, and we expect them to be like the girlfriend or boyfriend that you invest your whole life in, and she's your world, quote unquote. Or he's your world. And that's kind of this expectation we have with, you know, we bring pets into as part of the family. It's like this big thing. And really, it's, you know, sometimes it's a hassle and sometimes it doesn't work out. And sometimes I'm going to spoil everything. I'm just going to stop before I do. I don't know. I thought this movie was really interesting. I thought not my favorite of the year, but it's definitely in the top tier of films, I think, that we've seen this year.
Would you guys like to
spoil the hell out of this movie?
Let's walk this wiener dog into spoiler territory.
Wiener dog.
Warning. Spoilers ahead. Warning. You are now entering spoiler territory.
I hope this is nominated for best original song in a movie, because I want to hear it. I will actually not step out of the room for the songs at the Oscars if this one is nominated for best song. I will sit there and I will watch the glorious production.
You will remain.
Yes. All right. So let's spoil this mother.
Let's.
So two shots that where you're just like, please make it end. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, these shots.
The diarrhea one, and then the
final, like, well, not the, his finale, Wiener Dog. Her finale.
Getting run over by the traffic.
Well, the first one, oh my God. It was like, I was only in the theater laughing. No one in the entire theater was laughing. And I'm sitting there laughing. I'm trying not to because I feel bad because I'm the only one laughing. I'm like, should I not be laughing at this? What is wrong with these people?
Is this the tracking shot?
This is the tracking shot. No, this is the tracking shot that just goes on and on of the diarrhea down the gutter. And it's like, okay, for like 3 seconds, it's gross. For 5 seconds, it's getting really weird. For like 15 or 20 seconds, 30 seconds, like, it's just downright hilarious to continue to shoot this. Like, I couldn't get over it. I loved it. It was absolutely disgusting, but I loved it. And then, of course, the final shot, like, because you get this wide shot It's like the stairs and the whole thing, and you're like, oh, this is going to happen. This isn't going to happen. They're not going to do this. This is really, this is going to happen. This is going to happen, isn't it? And then it happens. We don't think it's going to, and it does. And you're like, oh, wow, that's really,
knew it was gonna
that's
happen.
Really, that's really horrible. Gosh, this is really, wow, I can't believe they, again. And you're like, oh, no, he didn't. He didn't. And then again. And it's just, like, I was reminded of, like, the end of the of Naked Gun, where, like, the dude is on the ground, and, like, it's a car, like, it gets walked over by a parade, and then, like, and so I was like the only one in the theater who could find that funny. Apparently, be, oh, treatment animals, like it's not a real animal. They didn't run over a dog. It's part of the act. So those two shots alone were enough for me to recommend this movie. Quite honestly,
those two would like make me deter anyone from watching this movie.
Yeah, well, clearly he's not your bag. Then you should probably not see any of his other movies.
Apparently not. I like stuff that is shocking and that, you know, grates on my nerves. But at the same time, these shots felt pointless. They felt just like endurance tests. And it's like, what is the point of an endurance test when it's like you don't really have much to say?
No, I think he's got plenty to say.
I don't know. I think some of I think it is possible to go a little too far with, you know, what you think could be an effective or entertaining shot.
Oh, I agree that it's possible, but I think in this case, it's absolutely perfect. I think any shorter or longer, and again, you end up somewhere else. You know, it's gross, it's weird. Okay, now it's funny because it's so freaking long. And same kind of same with the end. It's like, oh my God, it's horrific. Oh wow, this is getting kind of nasty. Okay, this is kind of getting funny again. It's just the camera's not moving. Oh, I think so.
I will say, as far as editing, I did enjoy. I enjoyed what they did with the editing here. Possibly not every shot, but just as much as they did longer takes, they also had, you know, very concise editing. There was one sequence where they're taking the dog to the vet to be spayed, and they have a maybe 2 second shot of the dog laying prone in its cage, quiet. Then they have a shot at the dinner table. The father says something, and the boy runs off. And they follow that up with the mother going into the boy's bedroom. And I thought that was a very tight and appropriate way of editing what has happened and how it's affecting everybody.
I thought you were going to say you liked the shot where it cuts to the dog and it had bloody diarrhea in its cage, and then the dad runs out and barks.
Oh, that was a good another one. Another good. All right, Jacob. It sounds like you are not fond of these.
I thought it was terrible. I mean, I know it's supposed to shock and upset you, but to prolong it like that, there's no point except just as an endurance test of just like,
I'm not
look
so
at how terrible this is.
I'm not so sure it's supposed to shock and upset you necessarily. I mean,
I wasn't laughing, so it wasn't funny either. So
it was pretty funny.
And then to end with the shot in the art gallery was just even more infuriating. It's just like, I want to like burn the celluloid of this film.
Yeah, but why?
Because it's just shocking for no reason. This film feels so unfocused to me. It doesn't feel like it has much of a point to say.
I think part of it is that there is no shocking. There is nothing shocking about it. It's certainly not after you watch it for 15 seconds and you know it's going to happen. How can it be shocking? How can it possibly be shocking anymore? You've been prepared already for it. Like that's the thing exactly. It's like it's not shocking. It's mundane. It's all mundane, but in, you know, an artful way.
Well, then maybe I don't like mundane films.
Maybe. I'm not saying it's a mundane film. I'm saying it's about, you know.
I mean,
the line between what we consider meaningful and what is in reality mundane.
I will say, Jacob, you probably don't want to watch any of other Todd Solondz's films.
I'm probably
especially
not going to.
Happiness.
No, I think you should. You actually should. I was kidding before. I think you should absolutely, because I think you. First of all, they're not all this extreme, as far as some of the.
I think it's Happiness is more extreme.
Happiness might be more extreme at times, not necessarily visually though. But it also might be better, as in, you know, a better made film. To you, perhaps. I would say Happiness is a better movie than this. But I think you should definitely watch more of his stuff, because he's as important as an indie filmmaker as this country has. He's definitely proved his longevity.
He likes to rip on all the other indie filmmakers through that scene with Danny DeVito at the talk.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, Danny DeVito's character is a schlub. You know, he's like, and
he's positioning it in a way where he's like saying people who are like anti-film school and who just hate on film school are bad. But then, if he's a schlub, then who are we supposed to champion? No one?
Maybe. I mean, do you have to champion someone? I mean, what's the?
I, I don't know, in a film that's this depressing and downbeat, I'd like someone to kind of champion, which for a while was DeVito's character. He, I think of the anthologies, he was the one that interested me the most. He had the most interesting progression and just interesting character overall. But
yeah, and I mean, he's the one who treats the dog the worst.
Yeah, and that's, again, like I was on board for it at times, and then that happened, and I was like, nope. Ugh. And as much as I'm hating on this movie, there were a couple instances I liked. I did like in the first anthology with Julie Delpy's character talking with her son in the car. I thought those scenes, not the one in the bedroom later. That scene was just, I don't know what you're trying to achieve here. But the scenes in the scenes where they're just talking in the car and she's trying to describe.
Where she's making up ridiculous lies to, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that scene was, that's when the scene showed like glimmers of, I don't know if I'd go as far as brilliance, but at least interest for me.
What the, I mean.
Because it was just kind of like, it was just like showing how, you know, parents might lie to their kids, or just to either avoid telling them the truth, or just to avoid conversations that they just don't want to have. Because that whole scene kind of, or that whole sequence kind of played out where like the parents didn't really like their kid that much. I was getting kind of vibes where they didn't really care about him too much. I mean, to a point they did, but they didn't seem super invested in him. The scenes in the car were just kind of like her trying to avoid having to talk to him, and then him trying to deal with that kind of exclusion by his parents. And I really liked those scenes, like those brief emotions that they conveyed. But then, yeah, it didn't really show up again. And I liked the last two anthologies better than the first two. But they, like I said, they weren't really connected in terms of, we don't really see how the wiener dog moves from one to the other, which kind of bummed me out, because I did like how it was almost focusing on the wiener dog as the connecting point. And even though they weren't the main focus of the whole film, they were the connecting focus of the film. But then they just kind of, I mean, like you said, you can make assumptions of how they get from one place
I mean,
to the
it's
other.
Not...
But I liked seeing that trail of like seeing where the...
So you want, so after the dog has the explosive strapped to him, you want a scene where they take the explosive off, drive it to the vet or drive it to the pound, and then we wait and we get like the, I'm like, what would that add for you? That
I would like to see something where it doesn't just show up like almost about to blow up, and then in this new stranger lady's house. I would like to see something where like it gets dropped off or something, there's an explanation, like picked it up at the pound or something. It's just,
I don't see why you need that.
I want to go back and actually clarify, or maybe take back what I said about you, Jacob, probably not enjoying Salon's other films, because there are two aspects in this movie that I can at least personally deem consistent throughout Salon's work. And again, I've only seen two other films of his, so maybe Jason, you can clarify, but his movies do tend to have a lot of taboo discussions as well as unsettling plot points. And the unsettling plot points, apparently, you don't really enjoy, Jacob.
You guys are making it seem like I hate films that are discomforting or something.
No, that's not the case.
I just, the way he executes them in his films, they just...
In this film.
Well, he...
You can't...
Oh, this is
you,
the only film
exactly,
I've seen by him.
In this
so.
Film.
Okay, in this film, it didn't work for me. It just seemed way too bleak. And
I don't mind bleak, but
it seemed pointlessly bleak.
I get that. I don't agree that it's pointlessly bleak. I think it's very pointed bleak. But I do think you would benefit from the progression of watching some of his other work, because it, you know, a filmmaker can get comfortable with his themes that carry out throughout his work, and maybe not necessarily build a world around those views in each particular film because of what he's established beforehand. So I think, I feel like I want to sit you down and force you to watch his other movies, honestly, and then watch this again and get your opinion. Because I feel like, I feel like if you saw the progression of what he does, I feel like you'd appreciate this more. And maybe you wouldn't, maybe you would hate it even more, maybe you'll hate all his movies, but I don't think so. I think you're being too hard on this film.
Maybe.
I don't want this to be about what Jacob is. We can just talk about the film.
All right. Well,
this week we review Jacob.
Yes. We review Jacob and his
What's your initial reaction?
Too many hot takes, though interesting that they may be. 5 out of 10 might discuss with again.
I don't know. I don't think we've, as a collective, disagreed about a movie more than this, though this is probably as much of a divide as we've had on this entire 50 episodes of The Fly Effect.
We were pretty divided on, like, Room.
On what?
Room.
Oh, yeah, we were. I forgot about that. That is a terrible movie. Well, this might take second, then.
All right. Any other closing thoughts on Wiener Dog?
You guys are probably going to hate me for making this comparison, but, like, halfway through the film, I was getting vibes, the same kind of vibes that I did while watching Mistress America. I think part of it was because Gerwig, and it was, like, an indie film. But at the same time, that was at the point where I wasn't quite hating the film. I was just like, this has merits, but it's not for me. And that's kind of how I felt watching Mistress America as well, where it's like, I kind of see what Baumbach's going for here, but I don't really like the way it's being laid out.
I don't hate you for that comparison. I didn't like Mistress America, and I think this is a far superior film by a far superior filmmaker. But I mean, I get it. You couldn't catch the vibe, like,
different strokes for different folks. I did have one other point to bring up. The scene right before we see the dog in the decked out bomb dress, where it's just focusing on the students, because one student went to DeVito's character for help, was dissatisfied with the information that DeVito gave him, and then walked out to his friends, and they were talking about, like, oh, your work's really transgressive and stuff like that. You shouldn't worry about what he says and stuff like that. One of the characters was wearing a shirt that said, I can't breathe, which is in reference to the Eric Garner killing, which actually just happened like 2 years ago this past week. I don't know if it was the way that that whole scene was set up. I think after thinking about it, I kind of realized that, at least I assume that Solanz is kind of making a jab at these kind of upper class privileged kids who go to art school who can afford to do this kind of quote unquote armchair activism, who might just, you know, take up these causes but not really, like, go out and start protesting against them. And I think that's what he's going for, and I hope that's what he's going for, but the way it was first came off to me in the film, it just felt like he was making a jab at people who protest for social justice in general. Just the way he was kind of showing these characters as just kind of self-centered, and I didn't even think of, like, class or race at first with it, but the way it was presented at first, it just seemed like he was making a jab at social justice in general. And I was just like, this is, what are you trying to do here? It almost comes off as offensive.
Yeah,
I found it that way.
I definitely didn't find it offensive. I did notice the shirt and think it was kind of odd, but I mean, it just kind of ties in with his kind of cynical look and, you know, how art appropriates, you know, these kind of social movements.
Yeah, I mean, I just also read it as, you know, he's just trying to poke fun at tons of different groups again, and it just gets to that kind of moral fence sitting. So it's like, what are you trying to say if you're just making fun of everyone?
I don't see why he's it's making fun of, like, yeah, I guess I don't get that. Like, why do you assume he's making fun of everyone? Like,
because he's just painting everyone in such a terrible light.
I guess I just don't see that. I don't see it, like, think he's more sympathetic to his characters than he is.
I wanted to make one last point. I referenced earlier on that it seemed like there were allusions to other films that had been made a year or two ago, primarily the first shot of the first anthology story, when we see the boy laying in the grass with his arm back behind his head, almost exactly like the opening shot of Boyhood. Am I the only one that caught that?
I mean, I didn't think of it while I was watching the movie, but now that you mention it, I can totally see what you're saying. I mean, I do recall that moment from Boyhood. So, yeah,
I did read one review where they said he was kind of lampooning filmmakers like Linklater. So I don't know if it was with that whole don't go to film school speech or not, or with that opening shot. But I can see that connection now. So.
That's a rivalry I would love to see play out.
I know. I was just thinking, I'm like, that's kind of interesting. Like, I don't mind Linklater, but I don't think he's on a level of, like, of Salons.
So you're Team Salons.
I would be Team Salons, I think. Although Linklater has a much bigger filmography, where there are a number of films I do like quite a bit, and I do respect him in general as a filmmaker. Although I did not like Boyhood. I thought Boyhood was a drag and a long mess.
Well, there's reason to believe Todd didn't like it either.
Yeah, and more power to him, because he's a much more interesting filmmaker. And whether he, whether he hates his characters or not, which I think is an exaggeration.
All right. What do you guys say we jump into our episode theme? Every episode.
Saunter, maybe? I don't feel like jumping.
Every episode, we choose a theme connected with our previous review. Last time, we talked about The Secret Lives of Pets. Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah, I know. I forgot to.
And so this episode, we've chosen films with rescue. Who wants to start us out?
Fine. Okay, so.
Such enthusiasm.
Yes. In our new location here, my Wi-Fi is not working, so you guys can fill the blanks in on the fly if you'd like. But my choice is Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole from, I want to say, 41, or is it later? Did you pick that?
I'll look it up right now.
Yeah, look it up. Look up the year for me. So Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole, which is about a miner who is trapped in a mine.
51.
51. Okay, so it's a decade older than younger than I thought it was. So 1951. A miner trapped in a mine, and Kurt Douglas in his like sleazy mode. If you watch Kurt Douglas, he has like the very heroic, like Spartacus mode, and then he has the sleazy kind of this and Bad and the Beautiful kind of mode, and some other subtleties thrown in there as well. But anyway, he's in sleazy mode here as a writer who does everything he can to prolong the story because he's down on his luck and he needs this big story, so he keeps. Through his advice, they don't take an easy way to get this miner out. They instead try a much more complicated way that will take a lot longer in order for him to milk the story. And it's a movie about just, like the kind of the vileness of journalism when it's in that kind of hunting for a story mode. And it's just such a great performance from Douglas. Probably maybe my favorite of his performances. He's I don't know, he's very great.
My favorite Wilder film.
Yeah, I was gonna say like it's up there as far as Wilder, and I haven't seen every single Wilder film, but I've seen quite a few, and it's definitely near the top. Yeah, I don't have anything else because I just thought of this when we came in today. So, but Ace in the Hole, Billy Wilder.
I'm jealous of you for choosing that. I wish I had thought of it.
I know I was really worried that you actually were, but yeah, what a great movie. I actually only saw it for the first time like within the last year and was just stunned.
Ridiculously dark and gritty.
Yeah. So you might want to lay off. You might want to. But I'm just kidding. Come on, Jacob.
Oh.
I need to see more Wilder though, because I think the only one I've seen is Sunset Boulevard, which I love.
Oh, it's so great. But, yeah.
He has a great array of genres.
Oh yeah, he did a lot.
He do Double Indemnity?
Yes.
Okay, I have to see that too.
Yes,
that was
you
in my
do.
Netflix queue forever, but then I think they took it off.
It's so good. I can lend it to you if you really want to watch it.
I feel like The Apartment might be one of his best.
The Apartment's great okay. Also. Yep, totally.
Is that the one with Lemon?
Yep.
Yep. Lost Weekend, his alcoholism movie, very good. One Best Picture, actually.
1, 2, 3 with James Cagney.
I have not seen that one. Yeah, he's great. And Ace in the Hole is definitely top tier Wilder for me.
Jacob, do you want to go?
Sure. I'm doing a much more recent film, and it's a bit of a stretch, but I'm going with the 2015 film Son of Saul, directed by Laszlo Nemes. This takes place during World War II. It takes place at Auschwitz, and the main character, Saul, is a Jewish man who's kept prisoner by the people who run the concentration camp, and he's pretty much forced to burn the corpses of fellow people who are taken in and gassed there. And at one point, he finds the body of this boy, and he, for some reason, becomes very connected to this corpse, and he wants to give the corpse a proper Jewish burial. And he spends the rest of the film trying to get this corpse out of the concentration camp to give it a proper burial and pass it on into the next life. In a way, it's a bit of a stretch because the person he's trying to rescue is already dead. That's not really a spoiler, but in a way he's trying to rescue his ideals of his people. He's trying to keep his Jewish faith alive, try to give some sort of just basic respect for this body of this young person who never got to make it to adulthood and in some way, at least spiritually, try to have it outlive the horrors of this war. Yeah, this film won the, well, it won the Grand Prix, so second place at last year's Cannes Film Festival, and then it won the Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film. I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's a film I'm going to see again because it is just very dark. But it's shot in this, 4:3 aspect ratio, so it feels claustrophobic, and the fact that it only really focuses on Saul the whole time. You don't get many wide shots in the film. It's very shallow focus, so you really only see Saul, and everything else is kind of going on in the background is blurry. You can't really make out precisely what's going on at every moment. It's this very intense claustrophobic feeling, and it's a pretty moving film, and I would definitely recommend checking it out at some point.
I need to.
I was going to say the director had previously created a short film called With a Little Patience. And if you haven't seen that, I would recommend that also, because he also uses the same kind of over-the-shoulder camera technique. It's all one shot, and it has...
It's not a one-shot film.
He's talking about the short.
Oh.
The short film, With a Little Patience, is all one shot. It executes the same type of over-the-shoulder type of voyeurism, and it has very, very little, if not absolutely no dialogue. And I thought it was also extremely effective. So if you haven't seen that, I would recommend checking out. Good choice. Little stretch. I was wondering what you were going to do when you first named the movie, but I think you pulled it off.
I do. It's a bit of a stretch.
Works for me.
Likewise. If you can back up your choice.
I need to see that.
You can probably get away with murder. I'm going to pull a twofer.
Oh, whoa.
I think.
What?
I think at this point we all deserve at least one twofer.
I haven't used my twofer card yet.
Yeah, I will justify mine. I think this is a very justifiable reason for choosing a twofer. I chose the movie from 1939, Five Came Back, directed by John Farrow. And the second film that I chose is called Back from Eternity from 1956. And I could not choose between both of these because they are directed by the same director and they are the same script. So he remade his own film, which follows the story of several passengers aboard a plane which crashes into the South American jungles, and they discover that the jungles are inhabited by a very dangerous civilization of tribes. And so they basically take it upon themselves. They basically have to rescue themselves and begin rebuilding their plane to fly themselves out. But they discover that they realize that the plane will only be able to carry five people, and they number more than five people. So there's a lot of conflict that follows from that, and it develops into a very engrossing story with this variety of characters, one of which is a convict. So this movie was remade by the same guy a couple years later, and it's a story that I think resonates throughout other ages. I know there was another film entitled Flight of the Phoenix, which kind of embodies the same type of crash land plane and rebuilding it to rescue yourselves. That movie was also remade. It's not officially a we will go in and rescue these other people. It's kind of rescuing yourselves. But I think because it is such a interesting and universal story of survival, I think this was a great, great film to choose. So that is Five Came Back and Back from Eternity.
I haven't seen either of them, but I know John Farrow. I've seen at least one of his movies, so I did recognize that name.
If we were to, because I haven't seen either of them, if you were to recommend one over the other, which one would it be?
I will admit it's been a long time since I watched these. I honestly couldn't tell you. All right, well, that's going to conclude our review of Wiener Dog. If you're in the Milwaukee area, you can catch this movie at Landmark's Oriental Theater. For more podcast episodes, you can find us on Facebook, or drop by the fiveeffect.com and browse our archives, or you can find us on iTunes. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback of any kind about our movie or the discussion, please message us at contact@thefiveeffect.com and let us know what you think. Join us next time when our episode theme will be pet owners.
Splattered on a highway.
Jacob's going to love that one. You're listening to Matthew Waltz,
Jason Callen,
and Jake Marie.
This is the Five Fake Podcast. Thank you for listening.
he doesn't. They say it in the Bible. You can get away with it.
I don't want to repeat anything that's in the Bible.
That'd be wise.
That's true.